Blog Talk Radio.
Your host, Merle Exit. Oh, well, I'm inside of the house, so it looks like it's a gorgeous day out here in Queens, New York. I mean, the sun is shining, but I'm told it's like getting cold. But then again, I mean, who cares? Because I'm indoors. And today, I'm going to be talking about... Yes, Esther. Okay. Yes, I will be talking about, I'll probably get into talking about chicken, but I don't know if they're going to be thrilled about it, but I will be talking about meat because I'm going to have a Maven butcher. Raven Ezia is going to be talking with me all about the, not just butchering is not what we're really getting into, but the old-time butcher who did it all for you. But before I introduce him, it's got to have a message from our sponsor. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. And you can get these absolutely wonderful brownies at www.brownies.com. And because it's the holidays, they also have, it's their chocolate-covered little brownies. Yep, it's not bad enough that these are so chocolatey delicious. They have them covered in Belgian chocolate. Okay, never mind. Thank goodness I ate breakfast. But so let's get into food. As we have Ray from Fairway Market. Hello,
good morning,
Ray. Good morning. Did you drool over? You hear the brownies?
I was, as a matter of fact. It sounded very easy.
Yeah, anyway. So, what I want to kind of get into, first, introduce yourself to my audience.
I am Ray Venezia. I head up the meat for Fairway Markets, all the stores, and I am a third-generation butcher.
Okay. Just so people understand, because this is internet, Fairway Market is a New York-based, right? Am I correct?
Yes. Yes, it started in Manhattan, and now is going across the tri-state area. We have stores in New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, and Brooklyn.
And Long Island. Of course, yes. That's where I found one, and I went, oh, my goodness. Why can't we have one in Queens? And years later.
And, of course, we heard your prayers and built you a brand new one.
Now, I understand you're the maven for all of the Fairway Markets, not just the one in Douglaston.
Yes, all of them.
I didn't know that.
That?
I thought you were just a big shot in Douglaston. And here, then I find out, oh, my God, he's the maven for all. Well, let's talk about...
You're fine, Merle. Like I tell you, you don't find too many people unless they have family and it's generations that are that intense about their business. So... That's why it works.
How did you get into being a butcher? What prompted you to do it?
Well, my grandparents had a grocery store, the local grocery store, and my grandfather was a butcher there. Had a small meat market in it. From there, my uncle followed them in the business, and at that time is when the chain stores started to come into place, and the old neighborhoods were starting to phase out. And he went into the chains and ended up being the head of meats for a 34 chains company in New Jersey. I followed him because I wasn't as much into the books coming out of high school, and I liked working with my hands and had been around the stores, since I was a little kid. And it all started from there, and I just followed him and kept going.
So basically, what you were doing then is like taking the cow and
back when I started, all the meat was still coming in fresh, hanging on hooks, all on the bones. We used to get what we called stray cattle. I mean, the truck would pull up in the back with every part of the animal, the fronts, the backs, and that's how you would receive the product. All our product came that way. My lamb, veal, everything came fresh on a hook daily. It was a lot of work. We used to need 25, 30 people in every department to be able to do it. But that was fresh meat. There is a big difference.
Well, when you're dealing with Fairway, I mean, how is it coming into the market at this point?
Well, unfortunately today you can't get as much of the meat hanging on the hooks as you used to get because the large companies, it's not as cost effective for them to ship that meat around. So it does come broken down into what they call primal cuts, and it's vacuum sealed. What we do at Fairway, though, is we do not warehouse any product. We receive it every single day so that every day we can check and look for ourselves over the quality and the freshness of the product and make the decision whether it's fresh enough for our store that day.
So that's the
major difference we do is we receive. I don't buy loads and loads of meat and put it in a warehouse and ship it to the stores. No, the stuff gets delivered directly to stores 7 days a week, and we look at it and check it every day.
Are you popping in on every store to check it, or you like?
Well, we have our meat managers are the first line of defense in the stores. We train them. They're with us a good 6 to 8 months before they even get into a store of their own. And we train them. I do personally pop around to the stores. I obviously can't be at every store when delivery there. But the process is the same. It comes every day in between our receiving staffs. We also have a lot of people receiving the product. And they're all trained on what to look at, how much, when the chicken all comes packed in ice, and they are trained on how much ice should be in that box. We even train them into how you can tell if it's been re-iced and it's not originally from the grower that way. So we train them in all those aspects. And those are all things from the old days of how the product used to come. I mean, chickens used to come. They used to laugh at me when I started because they used to come in a wooden crate. And the wood would get so wet from the ice, and the butchers would always flip it in the air and toss it so that they didn't have to put their hands through the ice to take the chickens out. And I would have a hard time flipping the box when I started because I was thin and because it weighed so much, and they used to laugh at me.
Wow. So let's get to before we get into to chickens. I don't know if you know I didn't bring them, but I have Esther and Eunice, my rubber chickens, and they travel with me a great deal.
I happen to be looking at your website, and I was catching a little bit of that action. I saw those rubber chickens were getting around.
Oh, how did you like the videos? Did you get to see them?
Yes, I didn't get to watch through them all as we're coming into the next holiday season, so it's been kind of busy. But I glanced at a few of them, and I thought they were good. I'm always happy to inform the customer. That's my biggest complaint is the industry on a whole took the salespeople off the floor. And when it came to meat, it is that important that people know how to be successful with the product.
Okay. Let's start by first getting into – let's get into beef. And the reason beef is because there's not just the cuts, but there's – things, Hereford, and we're seeing words like Hereford and Wagyu and Obi and whatever. So tell me what are those things, or tell us all.
Okay, well, right from the top, we do carry to this day what I consider the best beef in the world taste-wise, tenderness-wise, and that is USDA prime beef. That is still what the department is based on because it is still the best-tasting beef in the world, and we do bring it in, and that is something that you generally only see at the best steakhouses in the world anymore. But we do start there, and that is in heavy marbling that gives you such juice and flavor, and only 2% of all the beef in America even makes that kind of a grade. That's how rare that that's become. Then from there, as I told you, the way the industry has gone and everything is so mass-produced now, when you go to a store and buy just regular choice meat, it is such a watered-down product. I don't personally, as a butcher, find it to have as much flavor as it used to have, as the government is grading it to be a leaner product because people are conscious of the fat. So that's where the Hereford beef comes into play. Hereford beef is actually the cattle that was brought here from England that started in the Midwest and started the American beef industry. John Wayne was part of that association. You see in all those movies, you see that longhorn steer. That's the Hereford cattle. That had the best taste and tenderness naturally. And what developed from there, as they started to mass produce and water down product, the Hereford beef were used as the bulls to populate the herds. So I go to a certified 100% Hereford that is a graded choice or higher product, and what you get is a consistently very tasty, very tender piece of meat that is more like a everyday pricing that you would find in the store. Now, the OBB, that is for all the health-conscious people. When people hear about pasture-fed, grass-fed, that is 100% grass-fed beef that is USDA certified to be organic, which is high in omega-3, very nutritious, and we've been successfully carrying that for over 14 years now. And that is just a pure product. Now, when it comes to grass-fed and organics, it's really more a health issue. It's not really a taste issue. It's not that those types of beefs will have a better taste than the other beef. The other beef will be more flavorful, but the grass-fed is a leaner and more nutritious, healthier product.
Huh. And so when it comes to, let's say, for instance, like you're talking about the prime cut, the prime beef, does it, because of the quality, does it matter in terms of what cut you have, in terms of how tender it'll come out or taste or flavor?
The prime should always be tender. When it comes to the cuts, again, and there is prime that's better than others, like anything else. If you have, 100% of the prime, isn't all going to be as good as others. I mean, that's why I don't even buy my prime like that. I buy it from the same people that are supplying all the best steakhouses and restaurants all around the city. That's where I go into their houses and pick out the meats that I want when it comes to the prime, because the restaurants do tend to go, because people pay differently in a restaurant, so they're more apt to go looking for that highest quality, which is where I go. Now, when it comes to the cuts, that's all a matter of what you're looking to accomplish, because not every cut cooks the same. So all you need to understand is what you want to do with it. Like when my wife tells me she wants me to bring home a roast beef, that's when I bring the rib. I prefer the rib as a roast more than a steak. I mean, it's a great steak, but the flavoring of a rib is a little lighter and very juicy, so it roasts incredibly well. So I prefer that as a roast, where then I prefer the shell steak or porterhouse steak as the individual steak, because that part of the animal is a lot stronger in flavor. So as an individual steak, I much prefer that. I would not necessarily roast that as well, because it doesn't have as much fat running through it. So it doesn't put up with that intense heat for over hours of time as well as the rib does. So that's really what you want to get into when you talk to the cuts when it comes to the prime. Now,
let me ask you a question in terms of this, so that people kind of understand something, because you're talking about in terms of like restaurant, like what the restaurants get. Have you like priced like how you sell your meat, like what a steak would cost you at Fairway versus what it would cost you if you go to Peter Luger's, or what is it, Peter Luger's? I've never been there.
All these years later, over 100 years later, Peter Luger is still the benchmark. That's still who everybody compares themselves to when they open a steakhouse. So that is the top. And I don't look at it that way. Our goal is to always give the best price we can on the best quality products.
Well, I guess, though, a steak that
you would pay $20 a pound for here, you'll pay $60 in the restaurant for that steak.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of
wanting people to get. I mean, I don't price it against that to say, well, if you get 60, I can get. No, I'm trying to make it as good as possible. And you see, Merle, when I told you about those three different beefs, quite frankly, those are in place. So this way, it does cover everything. I fully understand when it comes to, like, the quality and expense of a prime beef. That's not something that anybody can live on a daily basis. That's why I have the Hereford beef, so that on a day-to-day basis, you can be assured to get a more consistent quality, get what you pay for on your everyday purchasing. And then, of course, I have that so that on those special occasions or you want to treat yourself, you can still come here and get the absolute best there is in the world, and you can still get that. So that is why I have that mix the way I have it.
Now, then there's also you have the you age beef there.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Mo, I will mention, you mentioned about the restaurants. One of the reasons that you have to go to those avenues to get that top quality is because they can get away with more. The mass stores are more interested in the retail dollar than the quality. They want to show you what the package costs more than they're telling you, well, I'm going to give you the best quality in that package. So they buy a quality that's underneath that. They don't tend to go after the highest quality because they're afraid of the pricing. Well, I would rather give you the highest quality, trim it the right way, don't let you have any waste when you buy it, and you'll get a better value for your money.
Well, my thought is that for people, especially with the holidays coming up, if they, you know, want to say, I mean, having dinner at your house, let's say, and buying the kind of steaks you would get at like a Peter Luger's is a gift. It's to say, instead of your, you know, it's like, well, we're going to eat at my house and you're going to taste what you would have at a restaurant.
Absolutely, and I love to put people in that position, Rob, because like I told you before, when people walk in and go to somebody's house and they have that meal, that person feels so good about their day because people don't talk about it the whole day. They can't get over how great it is. I mean, I actually got an email from a customer from our Stanford store that we opened it last year at the holidays. I was in the store. They were buying. We had fillets on sale, but in a conversation with me, and I told them that for me, I was personally having prime rib. They actually emailed me this year and asked if I was going to be around the store because their family is still talking about that meal and would like me to pick them another prime rib. And see, to me, that was worth the price of admission right there.
Yeah.
Because there's actually even a memory associated with that here a year later, have not talked to me since, but they reached out to me because their family's still talking about how great that meal was.
So if somebody's like, I know I had, the cut that I had, it was at the double cut. You know what I'm talking about? Was that prime?
Was that a steak?
Yeah.
Okay. I gave you a prime rib and an aged shell.
Okay. Yeah, it was the prime rib. Okay. And it's funny because I when I think of prime rib, I'm always, my brain is always going, you know, looking, thinking the bone. So I forgot. This is without the bone.
That and people have weddings. It's always when they have the prime rib. Is at a wedding, they have prime rib.
Yeah, right.
And remember, Mo, I have to say this. And here at Fairway, prime is a grade. It's not a description. Then people should not be fooled because a lot of times, especially at the holidays, you'll see the word prime rib is not always indicating that is a USDA graded prime piece of meat. They're using prime as, you know, an adjective, like it's the centerpiece. And you will find that. And they all do it. The whole industry does that. When I say prime in our ad, it's USDA is always associated with it. It's a grade. It's not just an adjective.
You know, I have to tell you that was the first one I decided to try. And And thinking back to when I would go to a restaurant and have prime rib, my brain is now going, this tastes so much better. Because I think, I don't know, it's like when I have prime rib at the weddings or restaurants or, you know, that kind of thing, it's like it is just so fatty.
Well, they're, you know, again, if it's not a graded prime piece, what a lot of chefs will do, they'll leave you, because remember what the deal with real prime beef is. It's the money. It's the fat running through the piece of meat. It's got nothing to do with the fat on the outside of the piece of meat. And a lot of times they'll leave a lot of covering on the outside so that that fat just drips all over that meat, but it's still not the same quality or taste you get when it's the marbling running through. And I was telling you when I saw you, I look for the thicker veins of marbling. I'd rather see a little less marbling but the thicker veins than a little bit more abundant marbling and very thin veins, because then that liquefies and evaporates so quick, you end up without the flavor.
Well, let me ask in terms of purchasing this. Now, let's just say that I'm having 10 people for dinner. And would that be the best thing to get the prime rib that you have, and then you cut it like, well, I don't know, you don't want to cut it like so it's for 10 people. You want to like cut it in smaller quantities.
Well, we suggest some things like that. First of all, when you talk about a rib roast, okay,
yeah.
You go to one rib is two people. Okay, because the space between the ribs is about two steaks.
Right.
So that's how you go first. So you'd say 10 people, we'd say that's five ribs. And you're right, you're not going to cut big, giant hunks because you can't cut through the bone. What we'll suggest a lot of times is, so you still get the benefit of that bone, is we'll tell you, let us take the bone off and tie it back on for you so that it'll still cook together, the juices will still come out of the bone into the meat, but then when you're done, you let it sit, as I told you, you always let your beef sit a good 10 minutes and let it absorb back that juice. Then you cut the strings, the bone just comes, you can just peel the bone right off the bottom of it and then just slice it boneless very easily for your guests.
Wow. Now, let me ask you, what is a crown roast?
Crown roast is one of my favorite holiday items. A crown roast is when you take, and it's usually done with, the most popular is pork. And lamb is the two big ones that everybody goes with, the pork being the most popular. And what it is the center cut or the rib chops. And what you do is you reverse the structure of the bones and you wrap the meat in a way that the bones all become the outside of the piece of meat, actually protecting the meat on the inside. It ends up roasting so much better and puts up with the intense heat so much better with the bones on the outside that it stays a lot more juicy when you cook it. It also is a absolutely gorgeous, mouth-dropping presentation when you walk into a room with a crown roast on the platter, because it has a look that no other roast has. So you get that part of it. The meat cooks better, and it is absolutely no harder to cook than any other roast. You put it in the oven the same exact way. When a butcher does it the right way, you cut through every bone and you serve everybody a chop. With no problem. Like I said, it's one of my most favorite things for the holidays, and everybody who takes one always comes back with their family couldn't get over, because it looks like you just spent so much time in the kitchen making this gourmet piece that came out so well.
So
we even have a video on our website at fairwaymarket.com that'll show you that crown roast, me putting it together, and it'll show you after it's cooked, and you can see how much juice it actually keeps in it when you do it that way. And it's not really more expensive to do.
So what you're saying is you don't do this with beef. It's just pork or lamb.
No, you don't do it with beef, because you would be taking like your rib roast, and you could never get the beef to bend like that, because you don't want to, you know, put it together. You actually are like bending the meat in a way and tying it together on one end to make that crown. The beef would never bend. The bones are too hard, too big. They would never do that.
Okay. So let's
works
get
very well with pork, and so much I have it. I always put that item on sale at every holiday, and it will be on sale again for this holiday.
Oh, okay, that's good. I'll be dropping by again to I think next on my list, I want to do a whole thing on produce.
Okay.
But anyway, to get back to this, I want to talk about cuts of beef. What are the various cuts, and you know, how do you what they should be used for?
Okay. To start, when you talk about beef, when you talk about the chuck of beef, the chuck is the front of the animal, the shoulder, the neck. So your chuck steaks, your shoulder steaks, your beef stew, that should all come out of the chuck. The chuck is a little lighter in taste. It is more heavily marbled and is more apt for long, slower cooking. When you use the chuck meat like that, it absolutely gets more and more tender as it cooks and more flavorful. So that's the kind of meat. When my wife wants a pot roast, I bring her a boneless chuck roast because that, like I said, that's what makes the best. Our stew in our stores, we take necks of beef, we take them apart seam by seam. That means we take every layer of fat, everything, we take it apart so that we trim down to solid meat so that you get solid cubes. And hands down, that is the best stew you'll ever eat because of the flavor and the tenderness you get out of it. Now, that's the front of the animal. When you get to the back of the animal, the hind, which is your round meat, your sirloins, that is a much leaner end of the animal. That does not put up with the long cooking. That is for quicker cooking. The round meat, like a round steak, quick pan fry or, you know, quick on the broiler, or as you know of a, like a top round London broil, you know, it can be tough if it cooks too long. So that's how you want to use those. You don't want to use them, you know, your stir fries, your steaks, that's the end, the hind, the rounds, the sirloin. That's what you would use for that. Again, it's a quick cook, very strong in flavor, so you don't need a big piece of it to have a lot of flavor. And that's how you would use that. And a lot of people don't know that, and they use the round meat because it's so lean, and they try to use it for their stews and their pot roasts, and it comes out tough as iron because it cannot put up with the long cooking.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Now, how about when you're making what do you call it? Chop meat.
Mm-hmm. The chop meat, rule of thumb used to be, the old adage was, you wanted fat in your chop meat for your flavor, especially your burgers, 80-20. In my experience, especially with all the information we do know about meat, and it does play a certain role in your diet. I mean, too much of anything is not good for you. I tend to lean people toward the sirloin. To me, is the best chop meat. If you're going to use it for chilies, if you're going to use it for burgers, because it does not rely on as much fat for its flavor. So you get a very strong beefiness when you use it that way. Now, if you're going to make something like a meatloaf, then I would say, or meatballs, then I would tell you, you know, there you want the chuck meat that is like 20% fat. And everybody should understand that too, when they're hearing these names, chuck and sirloin, it's really denoting the fat content of the product. Ground chuck in the industry is noted that it has to be within 80-20, 80% meat to 20% fat, and that is listed as ground chuck. Or you can state on your label that it's 80-20. A ground sirloin is a 10% fat item, 90% sirloin, 10% fat. That's what that's telling you. Round, when they see ground round, that's a 15% fat in that chop meat.
So now let me ask you then, when people are making a meatloaf, I remember, I mean, there was a days when it was you just used beef, and now it's a combination of beef,
veal and pork,
and pork.
The traditional like meatloaf that everybody uses now. And what you find is when you use the veal and pork, first of all, it leans the meatloaf a little bit because you use the chuck in the meatloaf because, again, the way you're going to bake that, you want it to have that fat running through it so it doesn't really dry out on you. And by putting the veal in the pork, it adds a little bit of tenderness to it and it gives it a little bit milder of a taste. So that's why it's so popular. You know, and it really stem from most people used to make their meatballs that way. You know, my mother, as an Italian, her meatballs were always beef, veal, and pork. And she always put a piece of beef and a piece of pork in her sauce for the flavor.
Mm. Well, I'm getting myself hungry over here. Okay, so now let's let me ask you about when you're getting pork. I mean, are there also cuts and things that you that are prime and all that, or is it just
pork?
Well,
when it comes to pork, you're not dealing with like choice and prime as much as, again, it's important to know what cuts will do what. When you're talking about the end chops of the pork, that is more the meat you want to roast. The center of the pork is very lean. So you want to be careful of when you roast that because it can get very dry. If anybody's had a center cut pork roast and made it, I'm sure there's been a couple times it's come out dry on them because it's one of those items that's so lean through there that it can go from being done to overdone. One of the advantages you have in pork now is over the years now, because of dietary practices and the health conditions, they've eliminated trichinosis in the pork. So all those years that everybody was deathly afraid not to cook their pork fully through, that does not exist anymore. The government guideline is now 160-degree internal temperature, or in fact, you can have your pork to a pink blush, and it's perfectly healthy. And when you do that now, it is absolutely flavorful and delicious, and you actually enjoy the pork much more now than you ever did once you realize you do not, because that was what everybody thought. You had to cook the pork to death, and you always ran that risk of it being very dry, and you don't have to do that.
Now, and in terms of is the pork loin like the best?
Yeah, well, a pork loin consists of ends and the center. You know, to what you're saying, generally in a store, if somebody says a pork loin, they're talking about the center roast. And
yeah,
again, that's the meatiest roast. And if you're serving a lot of people, that's what you're going to use. It doesn't necessarily have the most flavor running through it. Again, you have to watch how you cook it and make sure you time it right so it doesn't end up dry and it'll be delicious. But that's what you're running the issue with. That's why I love the crown, because the crown is that center like that that's leaner, but by reversing those bones, you run so much less risk of it drying out.
Huh. Now, I just also wanted to ask, does the store carry things like bison or, you know, are the kinds of...
I carry buffalo, yes.
Okay.
I do carry buffalo.
And
really a niche thing for people who are looking for a leaner beef. It was much more popular years ago, but now there are so many other leaner beef alternatives now. It doesn't quite have the same popularity it used to have.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really what made buffalo really popular to anybody, is when it hit the marketplace, it was a leaner red meat alternative. My issue with the industry is I could never understand. They used to run wild in this country like squirrels. We eliminated them. And now you have to pay a lot more for buffalo than you do regular beef. And for the life of me, I can't understand why it would cost more to raise. You know, but that the industry made it like a specialty thing instead of producing it in a way that more people could enjoy it, the fact that it's leaner. And in most spots, well, I'll tell you, if I made you chopped meats, hamburgers side by side, a lot of times you wouldn't be able to tell the difference in taste. It is a very similar animal, just leaner.
And how about do you sell shaved beef? Like
I don't currently do a shaved. We are starting to go into some areas now that have some of that clientele. I have done it in the past, so I am going to be looking to do some. But I don't currently do that, but it is a program I'm looking at. Because like I said, we're getting some feedback from the stores now that we're opening that we have some people that are looking for that.
Yeah, it's really, really quick to cook.
Well, we're actually doing some of this stuff through our cafes. I work with our chef de cuisine, Mitchell London, on his version of a Philly steak sandwich. And
right,
we actually do a shave. We actually take a prime top round of beef and put a little chill into it so we can shave it. So you can do it on that grill like that real quick. And it's absolutely delicious because the flavoring you get out of that prime like that. And as you know, shave like that with a quick cook, it's delicious.
Mm.
But
yeah, and the last...
You have to put it just the right chill in it.
Yeah.
Shave that right.
Now, I want to ask you about and chicken. Does it make a difference, like, what kind of chicken you get? Or, I mean, are you getting, do you ever get fresh killed chickens or what?
Well, I get on a daily basis, as far as a mass-produced company, the freshest chickens you can get. My chickens do come at ice, all right? Now, that's not, I certainly can't get them within a day of them being killed, but they are packed in ice, so I get them within days, and they're only good for X amount of time. And there is, in my opinion, yes, there is a difference. As meat ages, it loses its moisture. So by me getting the product packed in ice, that fresh to the kill, it still has a lot of the natural moisture in it. So when you cook it, you do get a more flavorful product, hands down.
Uh-huh.
You know, when people go to stores that see the prepackaged product, very
right.
easy to see. You see that liquid in the bottom of the package. Well, that's liquid that was in the meat. Now, think about from a logical perspective, when you put it into the heat, what happens first to the meat? The moisture starts drying, and the more the moisture dries, the tighter the meat gets. That's why if it gets totally dry, it's tough. So when you lose some of it before you even cook it, of course it's not going to be as flavorful.
I see.
But it is a lot of work to do that. Like I said,
yeah.
We do receive them 7 days a week, and we touch every ounce. We package every ounce. As a matter of fact, we hand slice about 5,000 to 6,000 pounds of fresh, thin sliced boneless chicken breast in every store every week.
And I understand, by the way, that you don't like, and I don't want to accuse of what other people do of taking meat and going, it's starting to go a little bit. Let's make something from it.
No, absolutely not. That is, I tell anybody who's talked to me, one of the things I'm very proud of is the fact that we do not do this even as a company. Everything we do is from scratch, and everything is fresh. I actually do buy all the meat for the company, and I buy meat separately directly for the kitchens that gets cut and trimmed in the store also. It is not that we do it through the meat department and after the meat that ends up over there. No. They get their deliveries every single day. We get ours every single day. And luckily, one of the biggest advantages of Fairway is Fairways are always so busy, it's a no-brainer that you get the freshest product all the time.
Well, that's good to know. So, in other words, because I noticed that you have you're making your own sausage.
Yes, we do. Absolutely. If I'm going to really tell you that we're the butchers, we're going to make the stuff. We happen to know how to do that. Between making sausages, as I told you, a lot of people don't even buy marrow bones anymore. But I will always carry them because you should never go to a butcher and ask for a bone and not be able to get it. I mean, that's the point that you go to a butcher for, to get those kind of things. And a lot of these things people are finding out now with the Internet. The information is getting back to people now, and they're finding out how important to cooking a lot of these items were. Our grandparents and great-grandparents knew these things much better than we did. We all got away from it thinking that they were not as healthy for us. And now when you learn how to use them in the right proportions, you go back to great-tasting food again.
I want to find out, wait, after it, because I have somebody apparently calling in. I want to know, I don't know if they're a guest or they have a question. So let me just find out a second. Hello?
Hello?
Who do I have for you?
It's Chris Malone here from Cameron's Products. You asked us to call at 11:30.
Oh, okay. Hang on a second. Oh, this is perfect timing. Okay, hang on. Oh, this is really cool because I have the, what do you call it? A guy from a company that sells smokers to put on your stovetop.
Okay.
And so I want to kind of end yours by saying, so we can segue into it, that one of the things you guys carry is because I was talking to you about bacon, and you can get, I guess, what I refer to as fresh bacon. So you
the fresh pork belly.
Yeah, so you're taking the pork belly and you're smoking it. Now, I had a question for you, which is, I guess, also the best way to get it so there's no, what do they put in it?
The nectar?
Bacon. Huh? Nitrate?
Nitrate?
Yeah, but you don't do that, right?
Well, no. In the smoking, there are nitrates. You can get product that is done that way that is no nitrate. It will not have the same flavor profile. But there are some people that do it. I don't currently do a line like that. But it is out there. Again, I would rather you use less and have the flavor than when you do some of the no nitrate stuff.
Right.
It's not really. It really doesn't have the taste.
Okay.
And it doesn't hold up.
That's
not one that does well with that transition.
One of the things I'm going to compare, because in terms of my having the smoker, is because I got a pork belly from you, and I'm going to smoke it and just see how that kind of compares. As I'm just kind of curious
okay.
to see. But anyway,
I'll be
Ray.
Too. I'll be anxious to hear about it.
So, Ray, I appreciate being able to talk with you. I may call you again. Not today.
Anytime.
And bring up another subject, too. Okay?
Not a problem. It's my pleasure. And everybody have a very happy holiday season.
Yes, you too. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye. Well... Okay, let's get you now. Let's put you up. I have to tell you that what had happened is I was waiting for a confirmation that you were calling in, and I said, oh, no, they're not calling in. And then I'm seeing the phone number up here. I'm going, Anyhow, I'm so glad you called in.
Well, we only got the email about 10 minutes ago, so.
Oh, is that?
That's why you didn't get a confirmation.
Which is funny because I had sent it like yesterday or something.
Oh,
anyway,
really?
It doesn't matter. I'm glad you're here because that was what I wanted to kind of to get into. Now that I had this whole conversation with talking about meat. Introduce yourself so people say, who the hell is this guy? Oh, introduce yourself.
My name is Chris Malone, and I'm from a company, Cameron's Products, in Colorado Springs. We supply a variety of cookware products. We started off in 25 years ago with a stovetop smoker, which is a smoker that you can use indoors on your stovetop. And it's a very simple device. It's very, very effective. And we've sold hundreds of thousands of these units into the market.
Yeah, and let me also tell people that this is something, it's made of stainless steel, right?
Correct.
Because I have a smoker that's made out of something with iron. I forgot what it is. It really works very well, but it's very heavy.
Oh, yeah. That was something that was introduced by Emeril.
Yes, what I have. And as I said,
right.
It works very well, but it's a heavy thing.
Yeah. That was a big issue for them because they started off with it's basically a cast iron piece.
Cast iron. I was trying to think
right.
of the term. Yeah.
And it weighs about 18 pounds to start with. And then if you put anything in it, obviously it weighs 20 or 25 pounds. And it's quite difficult to handle. It also takes a long time to preheat and a long time to cool down. Whereas our product is made out of fairly heavy gauge stainless steel, and it heats up very quickly and it cools down very quickly. Their design, I actually helped with the development of that product through a company called Orclad, and they manufactured it for Emeril. But they decided to go with a cast iron piece, and it was something that I did not recommend because I thought it works well, but it does require some patience, in the preheat process and in the cooling process. Our product is stainless steel, and the principle of the operation is similar, but the operation of our unit is a lot easier. Our unit weighs 8 pounds.
Yes, and has a handle. And
correct.
What did the thing that I want to kind of get? Oh, by the way, so far I have I did smoked salmon. The interesting part about it is I didn't use any salt. It didn't get the, in terms of flavor, I didn't get, I need to add salt to it. I think it, the thing that I want to say about this, and I don't know whether this is like how the brain thinks or something, but wherever the taste, it's like the taste buds that detect salt, it seems to like think it's having salt because of the.
Yeah, we introduced the smoker to the Baptist hospitals in the South. For their heart units, and they specifically, if you're on a low sodium diet, it's a perfect way of preparing foods because you don't have to add any salts or any flavorings at all to the product that you're cooking, and the smoked flavor that is acquired gives you a slightly salty flavor, which is the advantage of the product, particularly for those people who are on low-sodium diets. So from a heart-healthy standpoint, it's an excellent way of preparing foods. The product will cook in its own juices, and it does acquire that smoky flavor, which gives you the impression of having some salt in it.
Yeah, I'm I want to get into all the chips, but I was just – one of the things I was curious about, can you still, like, cook your meal or whatever in it and not put any chips?
Yes, you can, and it'll steam the product. Basically, it'll cook the product in its own juices. So if you don't want to have the smoke flavor in there, all
right,
you need to do is prepare the product and not put any wood chips into the unit. And what that will do is it will allow the product that you are preparing for your meal to cook in its own juice, and it will be cooked through. You may have to add some salt or pepper or some flavoring,
right,
if you want to. But certainly it is an easy way of preparing the product, and it will cook. Everything will cook in its own juice, and you don't have to apply any salts or flavorings or oils or anything if you don't want to.
Okay. And the other thing I wanted to ask you in terms of the rack that you're putting it on, because what I find, unless I'm doing it wrong, the rack is like very low to the bottom. So,
yeah,
like,
well,
if you have drippings, it's not,
yeah,
it
the,
doesn't, yeah.
The idea is, you know, inside that unit there are three pieces, basically. There's a base, and
right,
inside that base is a drip tray, and then on top of the drip tray is a rack. And we recommend that you put some foil on top of the drip tray so that it catches the drippings, and it just makes it a lot easier to clean. So, in other words, the preparation is that you would, if you're going to smoke something, you would put a very small amount of wood, and it'll be 1 to 1.5 tablespoons of the wood chips into a pile in the middle of the base. Then you set the drip tray down on top of that pile, and then line the drip tray with some foil. Just
right,
put some foil down on top of the drip tray. Then you put your rack down on top of the foil, and you put your food stuff that you're going to be cooking on top of the rack.
Right.
You then slide the lid on. It has a sliding lid. And then you put it onto a single burner on medium heat on your stovetop indoors. Now, what will happen is that the wood chips will start to smolder quite quickly, and we recommend to begin with that you leave the end of the smoker open so that you can see when the wood is actually smoking, and then close it and start your timing. And as you become more familiar with the product, you don't necessarily have to do that step. You can just close the unit and put it on your stovetop and let it go. The product that you're cooking, there is a cooking chart in the little cookbook that arrives with the unit. And if you follow those cooking times, you will get a perfect result almost every time.
Mm.
Very, very, very easy to use. I think as you have found, your email to us said that you had enjoyed the product that came out of yours.
Oh, yeah. One of the things I did, because I was making a lobster corn chowder, and I wanted to do something, get a smoked flavor into it. And I thought, what can I do? And I got a couple of ears of corn. So what I did is I smoked the corn, and then took the kernels off the corn, and that just I put that into the liquid, it gave an entirely different flavor to it, as opposed to thinking, okay, I'll smoke the lobster or something else.
Yeah.
But I kind of wondered. I did have a question regarding that. If I had used, I couldn't find ears of corn, and I got, I wouldn't do it canned, but frozen corn. If I took frozen corn, can I put it in a dish and in a little aluminum pan, and then put it on top and smoke that? Would that work?
It would achieve the same thing. Yes, you can do one of two things. You can cover the top of the rack with some foil and make like a little boat out of the foil and put it on top of the rack, and then you can pour the corn on top of that. And even in the frozen condition, you could just dump the corn in there and leave it in there for about 15 minutes. It will defrost the corn and it will smoke it at the same time. And then
okay.
You can take that and put that into your corn chowder, and you will achieve a very nice, light, smoky flavor in your corn chowder. You can do the same thing with we have a very nice smoky tomato soup that we offer a recipe for, and a squash soup, which is the same process where you smoke the squash or you smoke the tomatoes before you put them into your soup. And it gives the soup a really nice, light, smoky flavor. And it's a real smoked flavor as opposed to using one of the liquid smokes that you might find in the market.
So, in other words, when you're doing that, it just came into my head. If you have tomatoes and it's like, they're not as fresh anymore, meaning they're starting to get a little soft.
Yeah.
Would those be a great idea to use those kinds of tomatoes?
Sure. And you can then cook them up into a soup. And the simplest and easiest way to do that is to, if you use those tomatoes, that there is a method of blanching them in boiling water and then letting them cool a little bit, and the skin just peels right off. And then you can, with them in a skinless condition, you can smoke them for about 10 minutes and then put them into a blender. And you can add then a can of one of the tomato soups that are available. And you've got some fresh and some canned soup, and you will get that really nice smoky flavor in a tomato soup. Very easy recipe, very simply done.
Okay, I'll try that. All right. Now, what I want to get into then is all the various chips, how they differ, what you would use them for. So go to it.
Okay. Can you just hang on 1 second for me? Would
Quite
you hold
certainly.
Just 1 second? Thank you.
Okay. Well, while he gets... Well, we did already talk about chicken, you know.
In the front of the I'm back.
Yeah.
In the front of the cookbook that comes with the unit, there is a description of all of the different woods that we offer, and the uses that they should be put to. We offer 9 different varieties: alder, apple, bourbon-soaked oak, cherry, hickory, maple, mesquite, oak, and pecan. And the result, funnily enough, is actually almost in alphabetical order, from lightest smoke flavor being the alder to the strongest smoke flavor being mesquite. So, you know, if you go from A to M, there is oak and pecan below the M, but mesquite is the strongest flavor that we offer, and each one of them has really a very specific flavor and a very specific outcome. The alder we would recommend be used for fish, as it is the lightest flavor that we offer.
So when people, let me just then interrupt to ask you that. So in other words, if people want to have, and I know it's like kind of costly, you go to the store to buy smoked fish. So if you buy, if you get, you know, fish and you smoke it, so that's the one, that's the kind of one, that, like when I did smoked salmon. I don't want to use anything heavier than the alder then, right?
You can, depending on your personal taste. It's all a matter of personal taste.
Uh-huh.
You know, there is a difference between hot smoking and cold smoking.
Right.
And when you go to the store and you buy smoked salmon, again, there is a difference between, you know, the smoked salmon that you might use on a bagel and the smoked salmon that you consumed when you did your smoking process.
Right.
The smoked salmon that you would use on a bagel is a cold smoking process, and it comes out in a leathery consistency. It's a little bit soft, and it's been processed in a smokehouse for maybe 8 to 10 hours at a very low temperature, maybe 60 to 90 degrees Fahrenheit. The curing process is a little bit higher temperature, and that would be at between 150 and 180 degrees Fahrenheit. And then the cooking process, which is what we offer, it's a hot smoking process. The temperature is going to get up to about 350 degrees Fahrenheit. So there are very different and very specific results that you will get from different temperatures under different conditions. So if you purchased what you might call Scottish smoked salmon or Canadian smoked salmon or Gravlax or one of those items that you might use on a bagel and bagel and cream cheese, that is smoked at a low temperature. The next level is what you might buy in a store as a piece of smoked fish, and it looks a sort of a yellowy color generally. And when you consume it, it flakes off. That is cooked at a curing temperature about 180 degrees. And then the third level is when you would have a hot smoked fish, and that hot smoked fish is exactly what you had, and you can cook it. You can then refrigerate it or freeze it for a later consumption.
Oh, I see.
So you can, if you refrigerate that salmon of yours, you can flake it into a salad, and you can have a smoked salmon salad.
Okay.
Or you can, if you put it in a freezer bag of some sort, You can freeze it, and it will last in your freezer for approximately 3 to 4 months.
Oh, good. That's good to know. Then let me ask you something. Like in terms of like something like mesquite, what would you use that for? I mean, what would
You know, is a very strong wood for smoking product, and it would be used for something like ribs or brisket. But being cautious is a very good idea, and more is not better. You know, when you start off using mesquite, we recommend that people use a half of a tablespoon, because you can get a very bitter aftertaste in the back of your throat if you oversmoke the product. And oversmoking it with mesquite is very easily done. So you want to be careful. Generally, mesquite is used for red meats and maybe game meats, you know, if you have some venison or some elk or, you know, something that has a fairly strong flavor of its own, and then you want to apply a smoke flavor to the, you know, to overpower that individual smoke, the individual flavor of the product that you are cooking.
One of my friends just brought back a couple of deer.
Yeah.
After going hunting. So I had even commented, I said, well, bring some over and we could smoke it.
So when she does, I should
use mesquite for that?
Not necessarily. You know, it depends on your tolerance for smoke. You know, everybody has a different tolerance. And what we have found is that, you know, in the East and the Northeast, people's tolerance for smoke is fairly low. So they like a very light flavor. In the Southeast and the Southwest, particularly down in Texas, the flavor that they require is a much stronger flavor. So it's all an individual taste and how you've been introduced to smoke product. It's very easily controlled in the use of the wood that you use in the stovetop smoker, because you can use 1 teaspoon and you will get a very light flavor. You can use 2 tablespoons and you will get a fairly strong flavor. So you can control the smoke flavor that you get out of the product that you are cooking very, very simply by just adding less or more of the wood chip.
So one of the things that I also was thinking about is what I would call pre-cook. Can you, like, in other words, I don't want to, let's just say, as I was talking to Ray in terms of getting, now I got the pork belly, and
yeah.
I'm going to make bacon, and what I want to do is smoke it first. What's good to use, hickory?
Hickory for that. And again, you do not want to be cooking that product before you cure it into the process of making it into bacon. So what you want to do is you want to put it in the smoker put 2 to 3 tablespoons of the hickory into the smoker before you start, and then for 10 minutes, and then take it off the heat and put it outside. And let it just cool down in the smoker. And what will happen is it will absorb that smoke flavor in about 10 minutes. You can then go through the process of curing it into bacon. And that process is quite extensive. You know, there's a brining process that you have to go through, and then a drying process that you have to go through to achieve the bacon consistency that you want. So there's it is a quite long, extensive process, and you can achieve the smoke portion of it very quickly in the beginning.
So, in other words, what you're saying, it's not like I'm going to take the pork belly and just, like, cook it up in the smoker like I'll do a piece of meat or something.
Oh, absolutely not. If you want to make bacon out of that pork belly, then the process, you need to, there's several articles that you can look up on the internet or whatever on how to do bacon, but basically you have to brine the product. You then, it should go into a smokehouse to be cured over several days. It takes to create bacon, and then you have to slice it thin to make it into the bacon. But you can achieve the smoke flavor. You can either brine it first and then smoke it, which would probably be the best thing, and then you want to hang it in an area where it's going to dry slowly over a couple of days. And it will dry out and absorb the brine, because you're going to put a little salt or peppercorn on the outside of it. It will absorb that flavor, and then when it has achieved the dry consistency that you have for bacon, you then take it and slice it into the thickest, the slices that of the thickness that you want to be. You know, you can get it thin sliced or thick sliced, however you want it to be done.
Uh-huh.
This is a process that's going to take you, it's going to take a week or 10 days.
Oh, so I guess I'm going to talk to Ray or either that or bring back the piece of pork belly and say, you do it for me. I thought, my brain's going, oh, this will be easy. I'll just take it, put it in the smoker, let it cook up in the smoker, and then slice it and fry it in the pan when I'm ready.
No, not quite like that. No.
Oh.
You'll have to check out on the internet so how to make bacon, because it's a very different process. And the first step is to brine. So you need a brine solution, and you're going to soak it in the brine in your refrigerator for about a day. And then you're going to take it out of the brine and pat it dry, put it in the smoker for 10 minutes and let it cool. Then you're going to apply whatever the rub is that you might like to the exterior of this piece that you have, and hang it in a cool, dry place with some good ventilation, and allow it to dry for 6 or 7 days. Okay?
Okay. I guess I'll have to figure out another use for the pork belly.
So it's quite the process.
Oh, okie dokies. Okay. Thank God I got some spare ribs.
Yeah, that's why bacon costs so much money.
Ah.
It takes a lot of time to produce it.
Well, I guess maybe what I was trying to get into, are there, like, in other words, let's say, meat or whatever, things that you could, well, I have to go for meat because it's something that's raw. Something that you can, in other words, you're cooking it or you're smoking it, but not cooking it. You're giving the smoke flavor, and then at some point you'll cook it.
Yeah, you can, you know, what we, there are a lot of people who want, let's take a piece of pork tenderloin.
Right.
And you want to grill the pork tenderloin, or you want to do it on your stovetop in a skillet, but you do want the smoke flavor to it. So what you can do is follow the same process that I described earlier. You can put 2 tablespoons of wood chips into the smoker, put it onto a burner, single burner, and probably at a high heat for about 5 to 10 minutes, which will allow the smoke to appear inside the smoker, and then take it off the heat and put it outside somewhere and just let it cool off. And then you take the meat out of the smoker, and it will not be cooked. It will just have acquired the smoke flavor. And then you can put it into your skillet and finish it. Or you can put it on a grill and finish it. Or you could refrigerate it and freeze it and use it some other time. And what will have occurred is you will have that smoke flavor impregnated into the meat that you're going to cook. And you will get a result at the end of the day where you might have, you know, you may want to slice it and make it into a sauce with capers and, you know, something like that. You will have that very light smoky flavor in the pork at a later stage. You can do the same thing with chicken wings or legs or thighs or breasts. And you don't have to necessarily cook them completely in the smoker. You can just give them a smoke flavor in the first 10 minutes, take them out, and then finish them however you want to finish them.
So, in other words, let's say that would be, well, kind of be interesting to do with taking a, let's say, the, here's an idea. Okay, here's a brain just went like this. Okay, you take the chicken bones, meaning like the cage, you know, the you know what I'm talking about?
The carcass?
Part with, yeah, the car. Let's go like the carcass kind of thing. And if you smoke the carcass, and then at and then put that away, freeze it, and then use like the carcass or pieces of the carcass when you're making soup, so it gives a smoke flavor to the soup. Does that work?
Yeah, you can do. Yeah, that'll
work.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just making it up as I go along.
Yeah, well, you can do, you know, in the smoker, you can do anything from basically from chicken, at least, well, let's start off at the very light end. You can do tofu and cheese, and you can do nuts.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about. How do you do cheese so that it doesn't melt?
Well, when you do cheese, it only takes about 3 to 5 minutes to do the cheese.
Right.
And what you do is you make a foil boat, or you can buy these little foil pans that are maybe for brownies or something, and you cut the cheese up into cubes about 1 inch square and put them into the foil boat. Prepare the smoker with nothing in it, and let it start smoking. Then you slide the lid off when it is already smoking, put the foil boat into the smoker, close it, and you leave it there for 3 to 5 minutes. Then you open the smoker, take it out, and close the smoker again. You put the cheese then in your refrigerator. By that time, it will have acquired the smoke flavor, and it'll cool it very quickly, and you can then serve smoked cheese at home very, very quickly. If
so
it does,
in other words, let's say, I'm just like, as I'm thinking of this, like you go to Fairway Market and you get fresh mozzarella. Can I do that with it? Just put it in a foil and...
Yep, you can do that. No problem.
Wow.
And you do tofu, the same thing. You know, for vegetarians, tofu becomes very bland after a while.
Right.
You can smoke the tofu exactly the same way, the hard tofu, without melting it. And then the end result is that you can then add a smoked tofu to a salad. So you've now got your protein and you've got some greens to go with it. So you've got a salad that goes with the tofu, and it makes a super nice meal.
Wow.
It's just a different taste to tofu. But you can do nuts the same way. You can do vegetables, all sorts of vegetables you can do in this unit. You can do fish. You can do pork, chicken, and beef. And depending on what your end result might be, you can cook it for a long period or a short period, and you will get the result, the desired result. We have a cookbook that has about 250 pages to it, and it'll take you literally from everything from smoked tofu to smoked alligator tail.
Did you send me that? Did I get that?
I don't know if we sent you one, but we can
send you one. No. Okay. Yeah. I'll call you afterwards, and you can send me that. I want to play with this. I want because I'm going to be blogging things like what I'm cooking. Because I did,
okay.
I did write about the corn chowder and mentioned
yeah.
that I use that, and I don't know if I wrote about the smoked salmon. I will be because I'm commenting that I did that, and actually what I did is I had it served kind of like this, and I would do lox. Meaning that I put that out, and I put out cream cheese and slices of onion and some crackers as opposed to using bagels, and
yeah.
It tasted really great. It didn't.
Sure.
I didn't miss the what I call the lox consistency. The
yeah.
You know
the leathery consistency.
Well, I don't know what lox you've had, but the consistency I have is like almost like you're having raw fish.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of
yeah, right.
the kind that I have, but so I definitely want to kind of really get into this. As I said, because one of the things that I did when I made up this particular recipe is I didn't add salt. And I thickened it, instead of using flour, I took a potato and I was grating it into the soup, and that thickened
yep.
the soup.
That's
so
good.
It was also non-gluten. It was non-glutenous at the same
yeah,
time.
Yeah, gluten-free, yeah.
Yeah, but and the salt kind of came from the lobster meat, which I had gotten from Chuck's. A company
yep.
up in Maine at Chuck's Lobsters, and
mm-hmm.
And I guess whatever salt is already in it because of, you know, being the ocean and whatever, I don't know, and it didn't and it really came out great to do that.
Good.
So
super.
You know, I just have to I guess experiment with the various chips.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, in the little cookbook, there's a write-up on each of the chips and what they should be used for or could be used for. And it's all an individual taste thing, you know, so you can choose whatever it is that you want the outcome to be, and you will achieve it very easily.
So what's the website?
It's www.CameronsProducts.com, which is CameronsProducts products with an S .com.
Okay. Our
phone number in here is toll.
Oh, yeah.
888-563-0227.
Okay. By the way, I've got you written up in two publications already.
Awesome. Thank you.
I just thought I'd let you know.
Okay.
As something to get for people for the holidays.
Absolutely. We were written up in Real Simple 2 years ago, where we were the best gift under $50. And we sold 2,000 units in 2 weeks.
Wow.
The most extraordinary run that you've ever seen in your life. Anyway, it was fun. And thank you for the invitation to call in.
Oh, certainly. Have a great day.
Yeah, and have a great festive season to you and all your listeners. Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Oh, yes. Boy, that gets me hungry, huh? Although I could use brownies. I could always use brownies. Well, I was going to end the show, but I feel like I need a song, let's see. Where's Melissa Manchester? Oh, wait, don't. That's the one I want. Let's see. And I did not start it. That's not it. That's not it. No, that's not it. Looking on my list. Oh, I didn't put it there? No. Oh, here it is. Okay, let's put this on before we go. Talk to you people. Okay, well, I am going to end the show. Not sure what I'm going to be talking about next week yet, and I may even be off to Aruba. I'll find out later today. In the meantime, so have a good day, have a good evening, and I hope that you enjoyed the show. I'm not going to wish everybody happy holiday yet because I'll be doing a show, I'm sure, prior to that. So we go. Here was my... Okay. Well, I'm talked out, so...